From South Carolina Public Radio, this is the South Carolina Lead. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on April 12th, 2024, at South Carolina Public Radio Studios here in Columbia. Yeah, a little attitude right there. Ooh. Also, no attitude here. Happy birthday, Joanna Davis. 38, I'm right behind you, sweetheart. Yeah, congratulations. She listens. She's in upstate New York, folks, and she listens to South Carolina Lead podcast.
Interesting.
Now, on this episode of The Lead, we look at crossover week in the State House. What moved? What's still floating around? What's probably dead for the year, since we are less than a month away from the end of the legislative session? We look at what the Senate Finance Committee's version of the $13.8 billion, with a B, dollar state budget looks like. And speaking of cash money, we have research economist Dr. Joey Von Nessen from the University of South Carolina Darla-Moore School of Business breaking down the latest on creeping inflation, the hot jobs report, and more. What else is hot right now? The Lead's Hopper, also known as our voice mailbox, where you can leave us a message up to 3 minutes. How about make it just a minute just to be safe? 803-563-7169. If you got a good story for us, if you have a question that needs to be answered, if you want me to do your taxes, any number of things, 803-563-7169. We love hearing from you guys. Also, here at South Carolina Public Radio, we want to provide in-depth, transparent, and factual coverage of the upcoming June primaries and November election, from federal down to the state and local level. We want you and your voice to be a part of that process. South Carolina Public Radio was recently chosen to be part of the America Amplified Election 2024 initiative. As part of that initiative, we want to hear from you. What questions do you have about the upcoming June primaries? Go to southcarolinapublicradio.org and submit your questions by clicking through on that little link there at the top of the page. You'll see it, America Amplified, also super hot. I've been reading the signs, the eclipse, the tea leaves. It's official. We have crossed over. I'm the Columbia medium, Gavin Jackson. Call our toll-free number now, 803-563-7169. For all your psychic needs, now the eclipse is speaking to me. I see the crossover.
Yeah, Gavin? Gavin?
I have the sight.
Yeah, Gavin, close that third eye.
What?
This is the lead episode on crossover week in the legislature.
This is embarrassing. One of those rare times where I mix up my podcasts. Crossing over with Gavin.
All right, that's great for you, but I have not mixed up any of these. So we got to get this, okay? Caitlin is waiting for me with a potential baby, so let's get to it.
Oh, yeah, we're on baby time. Sorry, folks. Record scratch. All right, let's see here. Like I said on Tuesday, the Senate was in perfunctory session, so their crossover was last week, essentially. And I also mentioned that Tuesday is crossover. That's about a month from sine die, which is the last day of session. If a bill does not make it to the other chamber by last Wednesday, April 10th, the likelihood of it making out of the State House and to the governor's desk is exponentially lower. Now, crossover has lost a little bit of its cachet because it was a bigger deal when there were tighter Republican-Democratic voting margins. That's because after crossover, while bills can still move, they need to get a vote of two-thirds or more to head to the other chamber. Both chambers essentially have those Republican voting blocks built in right now. But again, if a bill you've been watching hasn't made it over to another chamber, or it's going through the committee process, or isn't on the chamber's calendar, I hate to tell you this, but the outlook is Shakes 8-Ball not so good, and actually Shakes 8-Ball dead. Oh, God, this 8-Ball's dark. And it will have to be refiled next year. Give me a new 8-Ball, please. This one's defective.
Ow.
So what? Crossed over on Wednesday. Here are some Senate bills that made the cut. S 1126 would require voters to approve a change to the state constitution to change the first words of Section 4, Article 2 of the Constitution from every to only a citizen of the United States and of this state of the age of 18 and upwards who is properly registered is entitled to vote as provided by law. So going from every to only a, Now, this bill did pass 40-3 with bipartisan support, strong bipartisan support right there. The Senate's three black female members, Democrats Tamika Isaac Devine, Margie Bright Matthews, and independent Mia McLeod, voted against the bill on April 3rd. The Senate on April 4th passed S-1188, which would require the written notification to the parents or legal guardian of a student facing expulsion that it must include their right to have legal counsel present at the hearing, the right to question all witnesses, and contact information for a legal aid service provider, which may determine eligibility for free legal representation. So if your kid's getting expelled from school, you're going to get a written notification saying you should bring a lawyer. Okay. Now, the notification must also include the right to access the investigative file in its entirety, to include all documents and videos, and all this at least 3 days prior to the hearing. This is good legal information for folks here on terra firma or the open sea. The briny deep. This bill passed 37-2 with Republican Senators Wes Clymer and Tom Corbin voting against it. Now, I did mention that the Senate was in perfunctory session, which maybe I didn't explain because that means they weren't actually in the chamber working. Instead, half of the 46-member chamber sits on the Finance Committee, and they were wrapping up their version of the budget.
Gotcha.
Now, before we get to what crossed over from the House, let's look at the changes the Finance Committee made to the House budget. And by changes, I mean funding priorities that will now have to be hashed out between the two chambers.
All right!
Our friends over at the state newspaper
shout out
found that the biggest differences between the House and Senate versions of the $13.8 billion budget is what to do with $600 million in surplus funds. What to do? What to do? Well, the Finance Committee wants to use that money to bring down the state's top income tax rate from 6.3% to 6.2% sooner, which will happen next year should there be a surplus. That 0.1% move costs $99.5 million annually. That's a subscription fee right there. And lawmakers have been gradually reducing tax rates as well. So they've already been taken down by 0.1%. Senate wants to move that up faster. The Senate budget would also be heavy on infrastructure spending, which, you know, this pod, you know, we're not going to say no. They want to send $200 million to county transportation committees. Now, really quick, if you want your road paved, start by petitioning your county transportation committee first, folks. That's where that money really hits the road. The Senate also wants to send $117 million for rural road safety, $100 million on bridges, not the $200 million that the House and SCDOT propose, and $53 million on USC's new health campus on Bull Street. Remember, $102 million in general obligation bonds for USC were just approved by the state officials, so a lot of money going to that new project. Yeah, go Cox. So yeah, a lot of differences there. Those are just some of the big ones, and I mentioned how the House budget is sending more money to bridges, the $200 million, and they're also using $500 million for one-time property tax relief. So we're just going to be hashing out tax relief issues and infrastructure, it looks like. So, not the worst thing. I think California has a $17 billion budget deficit.
California.
That's not even the size of our budget. Anyways, now, like I said, while one half of the Senate was in the Finance Committee on Tuesday, the other half was in the Judiciary Committee discussing House-approved bills that define anti-Semitism and the House Speaker's energy bill involving a new gas pipeline for the state. Both passed out to the floor. Tuesday was a busy day in the House as members worked through the calendar passing out bills. A big one that got out was sponsored by Folly Beach Democrat Spencer Wetmore. H. 4561 would allow a candidate or public official to use campaign dollars to defray dependent care expenses incurred in connection with a public official's duties for his or her public office, and the expenses would not exist in the absence of the public official carrying out these duties. Now, for full-time public officials, like I'm talking about, the dependent care expenses must be incurred outside of the public official's normal working hour. So when we say dependent care, this bill specifies direct care, protection, and supervision of an immediate family member that is either a minor or that has a disability or medical condition for whom the candidate or the public official has direct caregiving responsibility. In addition, campaign funds may only be used to defray dependent care expenses if that care is given by a provider that is licensed in this state to provide that type of care, or a public official's immediate family member. However, a non-licensed provider may be used if no licensed provider is available, so long as the dependent care is not being provided by a family member. So a lot of moving parts here. A lot of here and there. You're like, okay, does that apply to me? No, well, you're not elected official, sorry. But here is Judiciary Committee Chairman Weston Newton, who supported the bill explaining his amendment to tighten it up and his interaction with Republican Representative April Cromer, who voted against the bill. It's a little back and forth. Take a listen.
This amendment merely clarifies that a full-time public official may only use campaign funds to defray the dependent care costs incurred outside of normal working hours. So if the official duties or campaign activities require something after hours, it would not be available to use the campaign funds during what otherwise the full-time elected official would be being paid a salary for. Move approval.
You have a couple of questions. You're willing to entertain questions?
Sure.
Representative Cromer is recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, I do appreciate the premise of this because child care is expensive. But my concern is for all parents across the state who have to work for their part-time job, pay taxes, go through the whole process to be able to pay for child care. And so I feel like with this part-time job, you're really skirting the tax process. And I know how the state loves to collect taxes and spend people's money. So I hate that we're not really addressing the issue that could help all parents across the state instead of just elected officials or candidates. So were any of those issues taken into considerations or brought forth in the committee?
Ms. Cromer, I have absolutely no idea what you're talking about taxes. This has nothing to do with taxes.
Well,
but again, you know, this purely relates to expenditures used to defray dependent care expenses incurred in connection with a candidate's campaign, and the expenses would not exist in the absence of the campaign, and again, or in the absence of the public official carrying out these duties. My amendment simply says, if you're a full-time public official, you cannot use your campaign funds to defray these expenses during what would otherwise be your normal working hours for your full-time employment as a full-time elected official. Again, to try to tighten up or limit when this possibility exists.
Well, it just seems that it is for more of the elected elite than for the everyday taxpayer. That's my concern with all the legislation that we could bring forth to help the everyday parents. If we were concerned about child care, that we would bring this up. But you know, I appreciate that.
I understand the comment. I actually think it's quite the contrary. This is what allows an even playing field for those folks that want to run for office but can't afford to because of the barriers, to be able to be perfectly transparent with their donors about how they might spend the money and level the playing field. Ms. Cromer, specifically to your point, I agree with you that it shouldn't be an elected elite, that everybody ought to have the chance to run for public office if they want to, and being responsible to take care of minor children that would otherwise keep you from being able to go out and rally or to try to knock on doors and get support during a campaign. I completely agree with you that it shouldn't be limited to only those folks that can afford it.
The bill had one of the closest votes of the year, passing 53-45, with a lot of anti-abortion Republicans voting against the measure and two dozen Republicans joining Democrats in support. Now, this is not a revolutionary concept, folks. 31 other states already have a similar law on the books, and federal candidates have been able to do this for years. Even the House Ethics Committee ruled that House members could do this as well. Wetmore's bill includes all elected officials in the state. This does not apply to A.T. Shire. He's not an elected official. Sit down, sir. Restrain him, citizen. A.T.'s going to run for office just so he can get free child care. Now, let's take a break from the statehouse. Signy Die is just a month away. We got time to talk. I want to talk to you about the economy. Ever heard of it? It's kind of a big deal in America, to the tune of $28 trillion GDP. China, if you even trust their numbers, has an $18 trillion GDP. Anyway, for the average consumer who's feeding this beautiful economy, You're saying no, Gavin, Columbia Medium, you know everything. The economy is horrible, is what you'll be telling me. And I say, really? Really?
You sure about that?
Yes, inflation ticked up in March and rates will still likely stay higher for longer. But let's not hear me talk anymore.
Thank you.
I had USC research economist Dr. Joy Von Nessen break down the latest inflation report, the hot jobs report from last week, and more. Now here's Joey on that 3.5% consumer price index number.
Well, I think we know for certain that this battle against inflation is not done yet, and the Fed is going to continue to have to take this very seriously. So we can back up and talk about the progress that we've made so far to give the viewers perspective. So inflation peaked at 9.1% back in June of 2022, and it's been steadily coming down. But over the last 6 months, it basically got stuck at around 3%. It's been bouncing around between 3 and 3.5% ever since, with 3.5% being the most recent reading. And so the question is this a blip, or are we going to continue to see inflation come down to 2%? And right now, most of the drivers of inflation make it appear as though it's going to be tough to get inflation to 2% this year. We have housing costs, which are still driving inflation. We have energy prices that have been picking up in recent months. And wage growth remains very strong, which is good news for workers. Mm-hmm. But again, from the perspective of the Fed, trying to get inflation to 2% makes it much more challenging. So there are a lot of headwinds, and we are not out of the woods yet.
What else needs to be done, I guess, in order to stop this? Do they need to raise rates instead of cut rates?
Well, I think at this point, they're looking at either postponing the rate cuts longer or just not doing as many cuts going forward. Because the other factor that we don't hear as much about is that what the Fed is really looking at is the real interest rate. And that is the difference between the federal funds rate and what inflation is doing, because that's where you really see an effective monetary policy take hold, because we want to see rates that are making the cost of borrowing money more expensive. That's what the Fed is trying to do. And real rates have actually still been rising because inflation has been coming down. So even though the federal funds rate has remained steady, as inflation continues to come down, that difference goes up. Mm-hmm. So there's still a little bit of wiggle room there for the Fed to bring rates down and still keep monetary policy as tight as it has been over the last year, because it's almost by definition getting tighter mm-hmm. as inflation comes down. So that's the argument for maybe one or two rate cuts instead of four or five that the Fed had been looking at earlier. So we'll see what happens, but I think almost certainly we're looking at fewer rate cuts now than we were 4 or 5 months ago.
Yeah, probably safe to just write off a June rate cut right now at this point.
Most likely, yes. I'd say we're looking more at the fall now. And they're also going on these latest economic data, so they're waiting to see. And Jay Powell's been very clear mm-hmm. that they want to see more evidence that inflation is steadily moving towards their 2% target. And we're not seeing that right now.
Joey, is it possible? I mean, no, the Fed is always trying to get down to 2% or below. What if it just sticks at 3? I mean, obviously not what they want it to be. People still feel that pinch at the grocery store, at the pump. But is 3% maybe, or something around that area, as close as we're going to get for the foreseeable future, you think?
It's possible. I think it's almost certain that we don't see 2% in 2024 this year, at least 2.0%. Mm-hmm. And so the real key is the timeline that the Fed is looking at, because they have not been specific there. So they say 2% is their goal, but they haven't said 2% by December of 2024 mm-hmm. or December of 2025. So they have some wiggle room there, and I think that's really what they're looking at now.
So is the soft landing, where the economy's not too badly impacted from trying to lower inflation, is that still where we're at right now, you feel like?
That's the good news, yes. And we're actually far more optimistic that we avoid recession now than we were last year, even though inflation is getting appears to be getting stuck at around 3 to 3.5%. But there's a very specific reason for that. And that's because even though inflation is still higher than the Fed would like to see, it's still below the rate of wage growth. In other words, wages are now rising faster than inflation is, which was not the case this time last year. That's something new that's emerged in the second half of 2023. And so if wages are growing faster than prices, which has been happening, that means that consumers, even though they have lost purchasing power over the last 3 years, they're not continuing to lose purchasing power. And so given that we've seen steady consumer spending up through early 2024, which is the bulk of GDP growth, about 70% of GDP growth comes from consumer spending. Mm-hmm. That makes us more optimistic that consumers won't cut back significantly this year. Again, because wages are rising faster than prices. So the pullback in inflation from 9% to 3% has been very good news for the economy. It makes a recession far less likely, but again, it doesn't get us to where the Fed wants us to be just yet.
I was going to say, this is all in light of the fact that we have a really strong economy too, you know, strong GDP, strong unemployment. A little bit of a bright side is that we're not doing this in the middle of a recession versus, you know, kind of a roaring economy.
Exactly. Growth has been good and very resilient to these rising interest rates and the high inflation that we've seen. Consumer spending, as I mentioned, remains fairly strong. We see a very tight labor market, historically low unemployment that has persisted into 2024, and strong wage gains across the board, and now positive real wage gains. Wages are rising faster than prices. So all of that bodes well in terms of avoiding recession this year, which is why we're far more optimistic.
Now, we had a full show with Joey, so we'll be bringing you more insight from my conversation with him in next Tuesday's pod. You can always cheat, though I don't recommend this. You can watch the show Fridays at 7:30 p.m. on ETV, Sundays at 1:30 p.m., and always on youtube.com/South Carolina UTV. All the content is there for you, and you get to see my face and my mouth move. Now, I know there's a lot of national political news going on right now.
Yes.
We're about out of time.
Yes.
But I'll recap some presidential campaign trail machinations on Tuesday. I mean, you can get that stuff anywhere, so I try not to bring it up too much. But we are in an election year, so knowledge is power to the people. You're the people. I'm the only one standing between you and them right now. I will go to prison if I have to. Welcome to the wind down section, our little break from the news and all those hot jobs reports. We're here. We're glad you're here. Mm. A.T. Shire, producer of the lead podcast, I'm glad you're here.
Future father.
Future father.
Yep. One day, maybe, I almost doxed her name there. I almost said, hopefully one day we'll have her, I'll be able to give her her own podcast. Who knows?
Oh my God. I would love if she could and podcast.
Those are just natural skips. That wasn't us. I want everyone to know that was clean. That's whatever you're listening on. It was skipping. Okay.
I'm a disc man right now. I'm not an anti-shock.
They didn't put anti-shock on. Which is dangerous.
The worst part is Gen Z's like, oh my God, we got to get some disc bands now.
No, they're bad.
You get like 12 songs. We have a phone. You can have any song you want in the world, any given moment.
The masters are happening. Gavin, I know you haven't been following, but real quick. I'll speed this up for listeners. I want you to search Jason Day's outfit right now.
Me?
Search it, yeah. Jason Day.
I thought you were talking to our listeners that are driving right now.
Yeah, please.
Do not do that.
Do it. Drive with your knees and do it.
Close your eyes and drive with your knees. Oh.
So what are you seeing here? I would describe it as the I don't know, 2004 NBA draft or like 1992 Wall Street businessman. Who knows?
Yeah. Parachute pants. Parachute denim pants.
Yes.
Dad parachute denim pants. You know, and you know it's this white tennis sweater vest type deal. Malbon.
Malbon. Yeah.
Malbon. I don't even know that brand.
It's like a golf streetwear.
Oh, God. No
yep.
more of that.
That's
please.
Right. Yep. Speaking
yeah,
of
so,
Gen Z,
you know, I think
this is what they like. This is what they think is cool.
I think streetwear is gone.
A style that we left in the past, we chose to. I got a great text from the Russ McKinney. He said, if Jason Day's pants are back in style, I'm in luck.
Well, now this website that I'm on, there's a picture of Tiger from God knows when.
Yeah, that's
pants.
From like 92.
But that was the style at the time.
You couldn't
style,
get other yeah. pants. But anyway, like, Gavin, ugh, we're God, not here.
I'm all thrown off, but yeah.
Meg, please look up Jason Day's outfits from the Masters and weigh in.
I can already tell you it's a unanimous decision where we're going
to
say
yeah,
pass.
But I don't like to speak for Meg. She can speak for herself.
Well, as a medium... I already know what she's going to say.
You brain hacked into her. Anyway, Gavin, we do have a call. Are you ready for the call?
Yes.
Okay, it's not Masters related, but it's still pretty good.
Hi, Gavin. My name is Clemson Tarragono. First, I want to tell you that I really thought that the latest episode with Nancy Mace and Jim Clyburn was one of the best episodes that I've heard. Number one was having two different views is very important. The other thing is that I just appreciate your professionalism and how you would respond to their misinformation or their attempts at misinformation with providing the facts before you asked another question. I thought that was very powerful. It's one of the reasons I listened to SC Lee, and I look forward to your next outstanding episode. Thanks a lot, and I look forward to listening in the future.
Thanks for the love, Clemson Tarragono. That's quite the name.
Love it.
Love the name.
Love his endorsement of Gavin's interviewing style and his just, I don't know, his bona fides, his reporter journalism bona fides. And Clemson, thank you for calling.
Yeah, especially
and
because...
We mentioned that in the face of...
My appearance on John Oliver's show Sunday.
Against your will. If if anyone watches Last Week Tonight, or if you haven't watched the most recent one, I urge you greatly to
go watch. It's on the YouTube.
It's on the YouTube.
You don't have to be an HBO Max person, but I remember, like, so my father, Jay Jackson, who founded this podcast, gave it to me. Nepo baby.
He broke ground on this podcast.
He actually developed the word podcast.
Good for him.
Few people know that.
Hey,
he's a vociferous watcher of all things HBO, and we were out having like a little Sunday fun day. We were down in Charleston, but I woke up Monday morning, about to drive back here, like 6 a.m. Someone sent me a picture of John Oliver, and the over-the-shoulder graphic is
Gavin's
my
face, his
from
face.
Like 6 years ago on the old Twist
2018.
Set, and I'm like, is this a, like, no one just makes that meme.
I thought it was fake, yes.
And I was like, sorry, just like, get ready, get rushed. Go downstairs. Dad is always, he's always up getting ready, coffee. And I'm like, did you record Last Week Tonight? Turn it on right now. We're gonna skip through this. Like, I'm like, oh my God, like, what are we even talking about? Like, was it from that Nancy Mace interview? What was it from?
No.
But it couldn't be because that image was from like something. So I was like, what are they digging up?
Yeah.
And it was this back and forth between me and Brian Sterling, who's over the Department of Corrections, talking about death penalty. The whole show is about the death penalty. It was maybe a little slight dig at me, I think.
I think that you were used to illustrate a point strongly while giving people zero context for what you were speaking about before or after what you said.
Well, I mean, there was like 19 minutes leading up to that.
Yeah.
But also it was like, you know, I remember that interview because we were talking about the death penalty, expanding it. This is before they approved the firing squad here in South Carolina because we can't get the drugs to do the drug cocktail for lethal injection. And of course, there's a big sordid history with lethal injection not working. So I suggested... With a little maybe tongue-in-cheek, with a little maybe classic Jackson snark.
I think he was bringing a little lead snark
like,
onto his television
show. Well, you know,
show.
Like the crossover everyone's been trying to prevent.
Yes, exactly.
But I said, you know, can we just use fentanyl, which is a tragic drug because it's just riddled our entire country with death and destruction. We know it works, sadly. Why don't they just use that? Why don't they get it from a sheriff's department evidence locker, you know, laying around, blah, blah, blah.
The world's not ready.
I'm operating in the sphere of South Carolina, which has the death penalty.
It is
so since we are here,
South Carolina.
I'm not some advocate for or against. I'm just saying, okay, here we are. Here's how we're operating. This is, you guys don't want to kill people this way. What if we use a proven way of killing people?
So, I just love this.
Anyway, you don't really know fear until you wake up and you see yourself on a John Oliver.
That you've been dragged by John Oliver.
I'm
yes.
Like, oh.
It takes this long to process the feelings and then talk to your internet friends about it.
It's similar to me waking up after years back, you know, maybe fire off a little spicy tweet from the bar and you're like, oh God, why did I send that?
Correct,
so
yes.
I still have the PTSD from those moments, but this one I was like, I didn't say anything that bad.
No, I think it would be a light roasting, and if you're going to get roasted
I'm
by
okay
the best.
With that. Yeah,
you know? I wish the eye of John Oliver's Sauron would stare at me once in a while and just make fun of me. I would love that. And John, if you're listening, I'm pretty sure you do.
I'm pretty sure you listen. He's a big-time listener.
Vociferous listener, just like your dad.
You know what other word I like? Cruciferous.
Is that about croissants?
No, it's about plants. Like broccoli is a cruciferous vegetable.
I know.
Oh, my God.
I know.
Folks, he's joking.
I knew it the whole time.
You want to make sure I knew what
I... Yes, I was checking with you. Anyway, Gavin, pivoting from your misery.
Broccoli is the best.
I do love broccoli.
Or turnip.
Speaking of
bok
food.
Bok choy is cruciferous.
I'm not surprised.
Brussels sprouts get roasted right there. Perfect. Okay, sorry. Done.
So, I mean, we're speaking about food. It is Masters weekend.
Oh,
everyone thinks that that the food is always brought
up. The pimento cheese sandwich.
The sandwiches, the prices.
Crust.
Oh,
it's
the prices.
$1.50.
Yeah, they're $1.50. I want everyone to know this. If you weren't in a beautiful place getting just absolutely drinking all the Kool-Aid that is Augusta National Golf Course.
They're called transfusions, I believe.
If you ate any of that food away from Augusta National, you'd be like, wow.
What?
It costs $1.50? Fine. It is $1.50 food. That's what it costs. That's what it tastes like. And I want everyone to just accept that fact.
He will go down with this one, folks.
I've eaten the sandwiches. They're not that good.
I've seen their eyes. I've eaten the sandwiches.
I've crawled into
You can
the
buy
depth.
The kits.
You
can buy it.
Yeah.
They're all sold out, though. You know what you can also do? You can make it yourself.
It's $1.50, and that's fine. And the virtue is its price. And every year, we're going to have to go over this. But anyway, Gavin, that's enough of that. That's a lot of pimento cheese,
hey.
I gotta say. So give them the outro. That's the bun on the pimento cheese that is this podcast.
Oh,
okay?
And we are the pimento cheese, but we are nothing, nothing without you, our dear listeners. Be like Clemson, be like Adrian, be like so many of our supporters. Give us a shout, 803-563-7169. You might just get on the pod, folks, okay? You might just get on. If you don't want to, that's your choice, but you can always leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, too. And you can always, always, and I say this dearly, stay up to date with the latest news on SCETV.org and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina.
And now for the little clip I put at the end.
You're putting the gross in Terry Gross, bro.
Oh.